Well, good morning, TNC family. On this second day of August, 2 weeks from the NBA playoffs, 3 months from an election, in the middle of a pandemic, gearing up for school to start in some form, as the Earth making its way around the sun is, in the Northern Hemisphere, beginning to tilt away from the sun. Good morning, from my home to wherever you are. And I want to start by saying a quick word about what's going on each Sunday morning at the church, outdoors, socially distanced. Last week, we finished a 7-part study of the book of Proverbs, and this Sunday, we're launching a new series on prayer and its historic role in the Judeo-Christian culture, Jesus' own counsel on the topic, and how we can experience God through the practice of prayer in our era. So if you are within driving distance, please know that you are more than welcome. Now here with these podcasts, of course, we are in the middle of a 5-part series centered around 5 contemporary authors whose scholarship in the field of biblical faith, theology, and life is being read, considered, and applied by millions of people. 5 weeks, 5 books covering a whole range of topics. And with each topic, we're taking a deep dive into the world of Scripture, but also back out of it and into our world, where the Spirit of God, which was active then, is equally active now, leading us and moving in us and teaching us in our era. The book list, many of you know, remains on our Facebook page if you want to read ahead or follow along. But I want to jump in now to some ideas that flow from our 4th book, written by Tish Harrison Warren. Warren is a priest in the Anglican Church, where she works as a writer in residence at the Church of the Ascension in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She's the founder of the Pelican Project, a guild of women promoting the practice of faith across cultural, denominational, and racial lines. She has led various ministries over the last decade, focusing especially on addiction recovery and economic stability. And this is her 1st book, written in 2018. It won Christianity Today's 2018 Book of the Year Award. And although much of what I will say today is not directly from her book is the catalyst for today's teaching. And it's titled Liturgy of the Ordinary, Sacred Practices in, and this is the key, Everyday Life. Liturgy of the Ordinary, Sacred Practices in Everyday Life. But before we get to that, I want to start with this. There is such a thing as being asleep, and there is such a thing as being awake. But both have very little to do with day and night or laying down and getting up. Because you can get up in the morning without waking up. Because for some people, the alarm goes off and it's a rude and shocking experience, followed by a frenzied fog of sleepwalking through the morning routine. Splash this, gulp that, flush this, comb that, grab those. Left leg, right leg, shirt, shoes. Where's the keys? Where are my keys? And these folks are up, but they're not awake because they've missed the centering moments of a quiet prayer where they acknowledge the divine and pay attention to what God might want to do in and through their day. They've ignored the look on their spouse's face, the feel of the morning sun, the sound of that morning robin, the smell of morning coffee. Just please, caffeine, get to work and get me to work. I'm saying you can get up without waking up. Because there's a difference between getting up out of bed and waking up to what's going on in our world. And I'm saying this from the wisdom of the Scriptures, which use waking, as opposed to sleeping, as one of the most basic metaphors for how to walk through an ordinary day and discover an extraordinary life. The psalmist sings about it. Chapter 57, awake to the dawn, awake my whole being. Implication, I can be partly awake to the dawn. And the prophet Isaiah chapter 52, wake up, Jerusalem, and clothe yourselves with strength from God. Implication, I can clothe myself with all kinds of things. And Jesus in Matthew chapter 23, woe to you who are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are dead. In other words, you're walking around, but you're not really alive. And Paul, in his letter to the church at Thessalonica, chapter 5, quote, let's not sleepwalk through life like those others. And to the church at Ephesus, chapter 5, verse 14, wake up, sleeper, rise from the dead. And then this, Christ will give you light. Christ will give you light. In other words, when your alarm clock goes off and you truly wake up, sleeper, it is possible to see the fingerprints of the divine because the light of Christ is shining in the people and places and projects of your ordinary day. Which is what happened when Jacob finally awoke at Bethel and said on an ordinary morning, Genesis 28, surely God was here and I was not aware. And it's what Moses experienced by an ordinary bush. When the voice came, Exodus 3, take off your shoes, Moses. Don't you know you are on holy ground? And it's what Eli said to little Samuel when Samuel was trying to sleep in an ordinary bed on an ordinary night. Chapter 3, Eli says, Samuel, it's the voice of God speaking into your ordinary night. So say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. And it's what Esther realized after an ordinary afternoon conversation with her uncle. She says, I see now, I'm awake now to the reality that I was born for such a time as this. And it's not just in the scriptures, by the way. 17th century writer Brother Lawrence famously describes coming alive to God while washing pots and pans. Bono tells of experiencing the divine while singing a song in Ethiopia, 1986. Leading scientist Francis Collins finds God in a laboratory dedicated to mapping DNA. Rosa Parks, in her book Quiet Strength, says, I felt the Lord on a city bus. Quote, on that bus, God did away with my fear. It was time for someone to stand up, or in my case, sit down. Author Shauna Nyquist finds God in cold tangerines and cabin porches. And if you've been listening to the Wednesday podcast, Anne Moore is awake to the handiwork of God in sunflowers and smiles and grandchildren and garden vegetables. And Tish Harrison Warren says, we too must wake up with the expectation that the divine is infusing every moment of our ordinary day, every atom and electron and all matter and all energy. Because there's such a thing as being asleep, and there's such a thing as being awake. And so we must wake up and get curious about what will God show me today? And what will God accomplish through me today? And what is the divine doing that I can participate in today? And TNC, these are such important questions for us because, as Annie Dillard has famously said, how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. And as Dallas Willard reminds us, God has yet to bless anyone except where they actually are. And so if you miss the presence of God on this day, this ordinary day where you actually are, then you may miss the life God has in store for you. Which is why Warren's book, Liturgy of the Ordinary, is a call to engage in some everyday practices that can wake us up to the divine. And in the book, she talks about strategies, a whole bunch of them, from solitude and confession to rest and food and friendships and celebrations. She goes through a bunch of strategies for waking up to the divine. But in our time that remains here, I just want to mention three practices that I believe can wake us up to the divine in our era. And here's the first, the passing of the peace. The passing of the peace. Now, this is not, please pass me a piece of pie. This is, we must pass the P-E-A-C-E, which is actually a church phrase, the passing of the peace, passing the peace, which has been part of some Christian worship services since the dawn of the church, taking place in the middle of a church service, often including a greeting or a corporate response, acknowledging the importance of forgiveness and understanding and reconciliation. Peace. And the purpose of the passing of the peace in a church service is so that extending peace is something that will find its way into our everyday, mostly small, unseen moments. Peace in the kitchen, peace with the store clerk, peace toward our work colleagues, peace with our neighbors, peace with our words and texts and posts, and peace with those with whom it is sometimes the hardest, our spouses, children, or fellow church members. See, here's the thing. Sometimes we like to believe in this big idea of peace. I believe in peace. Peace for the world. Peace for our policies. Peace for our politics. Peace for our cities. I follow Jesus, after all, the Prince of Peace. But sometimes we get so caught up in the big idea of peace that we forget to practice it in the most ordinary and obvious places. C.S. Lewis has a great little book called Screwtape Letters, a book cleverly written from the perspective of the devil. And it's a book imagining a mentoring relationship between a senior demon and a junior apprentice demon who's just starting to learn about how to be a devil. And in the book, the senior demon, Screwtape, coaches a junior devil, Wormwood, on how to destroy a man's relationship with others. And Screwtape says, quote, keep his mind off the most elementary of duties, Wormwood, by directing it to the most advanced and spiritual ideas. Have him neglect the obvious, so that he can be turned at a moment's notice from impassioned prayer for a wife or a son's soul to beating or insulting the real wife or son without a qualm. Get him to neglect the obvious, the senior demon coaches. And in Warren's book, she confesses, quote, I often neglect the obvious, proclaiming a radical love for the broader world, even as I neglect to care for those closest to me, in my home, my neighborhood, my church, the real people right around me. She goes on, I'm a pacifist who yells at her husband. I admire her vulnerability and that skillful turn of phrase, which has made me think about others, you know, like this one. I'm an activist who mostly stays at home. I'm a conservationist who piles up 7 bags of trash by the street for the garbage collector to throw away each week. I'm a deist who regularly neglects meditation, prayer, and worship most days. I'm humble. Except I don't trust experts who don't support what I want to believe. I'm a philanthropist who only gives generously if I have some left over. I'm an optimist who is pretty sure this is another dead end. I'm a literalist, you know, metaphorically speaking. I'm a pacifist, she says, who yells at her husband. I have a plan for world peace, many people say, but I'll need to communicate it through this harsh tweet, angry text, or comment. Friends, I gotta tell you, maybe we should stop proclaiming peace from the mountaintops and start living peace in our daily spheres. Because if you don't love your neighbor or family member or church member well, how do you think that we're gonna respond to your plan for world peace? You know, on the night before his crucifixion, Jesus knelt down and washed his disciples' feet, even the feet of those he knew would soon deny him. Because it will always cost us something to be about this ministry of passing the peace. It means we may not get the last word or get to hold that person's mistakes against them or get credit for our acts of servanthood. And it may be hard in a world that's so on edge in our era, but God is calling us and forming us to be a people through whom, over the course of a plethora of ordinary moments, in ordinary days, we begin to establish a larger kingdom of peace. And so, TNC, we must lay down our swords in the kitchen and in the car and behind our keyboards and computer screens and in ordinary conversations, because God is forming us into people who are capable of saying to the world through our lives, peace of Christ to you. And I believe that if we will do the everyday work of passing the peace, that we're going to wake up to new energies and new possibilities and new awarenesses of the divine light of Christ shining in our world. The second practice that I think can wake us up to the divine in our era is the habit of hustle. The habit of hustle. The writer of Ecclesiastes puts it this way, chapter 9. Whatever turns up, grab it and do it heartily. This is about the daily practice of seeing that God is already up to something in my ordinary day. And so my job, whatever it is, to study or volunteer or parent or teach or type or clean or fix, your task is not to inject God into your work, but rather to join God in the work he is already doing. This is why Paul writes in Colossians chapter 3 that we ought to come to work with all our might as unto the Lord. It's about working hard. It's about the habit of hustle. You know, I love that quote that's made its way around the internet for some time now. Goes like this: there are no traffic jams on the extra mile. Because if you work hard and go the extra mile, you'll discover an open road of opportunity and possibility. And quite frankly, fun. Some of you know I've taught piano lessons a couple nights a week for about 20 years, and I've told some of you this before, but I've discovered over the past 20 years as a piano teacher that the harder a student works, the more fun they have. Because almost always, hard work will set you up for opportunities and fun. To use the baseball analogy, hard work is like your setup pitch. You know, in baseball, a pitcher will try to strike out a batter using a sequence of pitches, and the key pitch in any at-bat is usually what is called the setup pitch. It's the pitch that will set up the strikeout pitch. And often, it's the fastball, because the batter will see the fastball and have to account for that with every other pitch thrown. And so you throw the fastball, and it sets up like the curve or the slider. And I'm just saying, hard work is your fastball, because it will set up the fun. It will set up the curve. It will set up the slider. Hard work will set up success. And so we need to develop this habit of hustle, the daily practice of praying for it and seeking accountability for it and making lists to structure it and planning our sleeping, eating, and exercise in a way to maximize it. Because hustle is a habit, and if you'll work hard and stay focused and be kind and eat your vegetables and go on a walk and get good sleep and repeat, work hard, stay focused, be kind, eat your vegetables, go on a walk, get good sleep, repeat, then you'll start to say, wow, it seems like God's opening up opportunities for me at work and at school and in my neighborhood. But these opportunities will only be seen because it's God working in and through your hustle. I'm saying that if we'll do the everyday work of hustle, we will wake up to new energies and new possibilities and new awarenesses of the divine light of Christ in our world. The habit of hustle. Finally, the third practice that can wake us up to the divine is the gift of gratitude. The gift of gratitude. I'm saying, if you want to turn any mundane moment into a sacred moment, then give thanks. I'm serious. Give thanks for that cool breeze, and it's suddenly a sacred breeze. Give thanks for that drink of water, and it's suddenly a sacred drink of water. Give thanks for that kind gesture. Give thanks for that word. Give thanks for that act of service. In the book, Warren writes, quote, "Thanksgiving will transform every humble experience into a moment to recall that we receive all of life by grace." She says, "Thanksgiving transforms us from people who are merely individualistic consumers into people who are together imagining Christ working in the world." And then she says, "We are a people nourished by gratitude." Now think about that. Gratitude will nourish us. I watched a 2019 documentary last week called American Factory. It won the Academy Award for Best Documentary Picture. It also won like four other awards last year. But it's about a factory in Dayton, Ohio that closes, and about a Chinese billionaire who comes in and opens up a new factory, but becomes unhappy with how inefficient the American system is. Only 5-day work weeks, only 8-hour work days. And then this, which is kind of the main thrust of the documentary, the U.S. worker wants to feel appreciated. And the documentary shows that the workers don't want to be rich, they just want to be appreciated. They don't want extra vacation time. They just want to be appreciated. And the documentary is about how appreciation is perhaps the key ingredient that will end up driving performance and camaraderie and satisfaction and profitability. Because feeling appreciated matters. I listened to part of an interview recently that Howard Stern did with Tom Brady. Tom Brady, of course, former New England Patriots quarterback, probably the best quarterback to ever play the game, but he recently left New England to play for Tampa Bay. And in the interview, Stern asked Brady, "When did you decide to leave New England?" And Brady answered, quote, "I don't think there was a final decision until it happened, but I would say I probably knew before the start of last season that it was my last year. I knew that it was just, our time was coming to an end." which caused sports writers to scramble and ask, well, what happened before the start of last season? And I'll tell you what the speculation is in the sports world. It's a lack of gratitude that Tom Brady felt. Because in January 2018, after he was MVP of the league and he had been taking pay cuts for years to help the team, New England coaches were reported to have said, quote, truth is, we can win Super Bowls with multiple quarterbacks. Which didn't make Brady feel very appreciated, which turns out opened the door to opportunities. It didn't decide it, mind you, but it opened up the door such that Brady began to field calls from other people, other teams, for the first time in his career. In other words, the day you begin to feel unappreciated is the day your relationships will begin to deteriorate. And for Brady, that was the day the door opened up to other teams. And this is just a universal principle, friends, because if you're married and do not feel fully appreciated, then everything will start to turn sour. And if you have a boss and do not feel fully appreciated, then everything will start to get frustrating. And if you're a parent and you don't feel appreciated, then everything will be more exhausting. Because when you don't feel appreciated in anything, then everything starts to get irritating. And so we must develop the sacred practice of noticing, of savoring, and of giving the gift of gratitude, because the things of the divine will come alive in the context of gratitude. We must become people who say thank you for ordinary blessings that greet us every day. And I believe if we will do the everyday work of gratitude, we will wake up to new energies and new possibilities and a new awareness of the divine light of Christ in our relationships and our world. The other night I was lying in bed, couldn't sleep, and I did it again. I reached for my phone, and I started with something, but I ended up on YouTube watching an old C-SPAN interview with writer John Updike. Updike passed away in 2019, but was universally considered one of the greatest writers of the 20th century. He published more than 50 books in his career, and he won virtually every literary prize, including two Pulitzers for his book called Rabbit is Rich, and his book called Rabbit at Rest. He also won National Book Awards. Brilliant writer. He wrote 50 books, but it's his rabbit books that are most famous. And in these books, the character is a man named Rabbit. And I watched this interview from 2005 in which he was asked what Rabbit would think of today's big news items. And Updike's response was that Rabbit would likely prefer to pay more attention to the smaller things, the everyday things, like clothes and roller skates, and mundane things that when they're given their beautiful due, start to seed and influence the bigger things. I want to give the mundane its beautiful due, Updike said. In TNC, we need to give the mundane its beautiful due. We must come to see that God does his best work, not only in galaxies and sunsets and beaches and in the middle of that third worship song inside a church, but also through ordinary practices like cleaning, bending, reaching, chopping, stirring, walking, listening, posting, tweeting, texting, brushing your teeth, checking email, and even making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I end now by reading from Tish Warren's book, quote, "The crucible of our formation is in the anonymous monotony of our daily routines, daily life, dishes in the sink, children that ask the same questions and want the same stories again and again and again, the long doldrums of the afternoon. Much of life is returning over and over to the same work and the same habits. She goes on, a sign hangs on the wall in a new monastic Christian community nearby where I live. It says, quote, everyone wants a revolution. No one wants to do the dishes. Warren says, I was and remain a Christian who longs for revolution, for things to be made new and whole in beautiful and big ways. But what I am slowly seeing is that you can't get to the revolution without learning to do the dishes. Let's pray. God, I pray that we would wake up, that we'd wake up and come alive to the reality that you are infusing every moment of our ordinary day. Every atom and electron and all matter and all energy, every conversation. Will you help us, God, see that how we spend our days with you is, of course, how we will spend our lives with you. And so I pray that you would bless us this day, right here where we are. God, wake us up. Wake us up to the passing of the peace. And the habit of hustle and the gift of gratitude. Amen.